Welcome to the Anderson Business Advisors Podcast, the nationally recognized preferred provider for asset protection and tax planning in the nation. This show is for investors and business owners looking to save on taxes and build long-term wealth with Toby Mathis, an attorney, author, business owner, and a featured instructor at Anderson's Tax and Asset Protection event held throughout the country. Enjoy the show.
Hey guys, this is Toby Mathis, and I have
Tony Covey.
Yeah. Tony Covey here, sitting in for Jeff. And I should say that Jeff's sitting in for her. There's some highs and people saying hi already. That's good. So we're going to get rocking into this thing. I know we're, this is the midsummer doldrums, right? Where everybody's like, oh, taxes. Oh, I'm going to go sit by my pool, whatever. The smart people are in here. Getting their taxes on.
Right.
Because now's the time. Hey, put that in. Let's see. But can you give her a goatee? Oh, you guys are not very nice.
Give me a goatee?
Yes.
Oh, dear.
All right.
Hope so, I don't need a goatee for you.
Yeah. This is completely aside, but Clint once was saying, hey, you should never trust a guy with facial hair. And he's being all mean. And Tracy was saying, so that's why nobody trusts your wife. I got absolute crickets on that one. No, Tracy doesn't. I know. Tough crowd. All right. Let's get going. Hey, you're listening to Tax Tuesday. We're going to get we have a lot of questions. First off, let's jump in and say, if you want to continue the learning experience, obviously social media is a good place to start. We are all over the place on social media. My personal favorite is jumping in and going in and doing the YouTube. The rules, some of you guys are giving me a little hard time for that. See, that was years ago when I was much more of a smart arse. Tax Tuesday rules, ask live, we'll answer the question. There's a bunch of live questions already that have been asked, and we will go ahead and jump onto that. Go ahead and send in longer questions to Tax Tuesday at Anderson Advisors. That's where we pull the questions that are going to be our opening questions. And there's usually somewhere between 10 and 20 of those. We say we're going to take an hour, but I don't remember the last time we actually took an hour. It's usually an hour and 1 minute, give or take a half hour or an hour. All right. If you need a detailed response, you need to become a tax client, and basically, if you start coming at us and you have a million questions, we're probably going to say you gotta retain us. This is fast, fun, and educational. We want to give back and help educate. So we like doing this because you guys hear so many. Like, I can't even count how many folks come up to me when I'm teaching other events or just reach out, and they know so much more than even their accountants just because they've been listening to what all the questions come at, and they start learning the gist of it. Once you get it, you can kind of never not get it, and you're able to get it. All right, opening questions. I have an empty plot of land. If I sell it and have a loss, am I able to write off the loss on my taxes? Second question, can one set up a hedge fund or other entity where you can trade your stocks so you're not taxed as long as the proceeds stay in the fund you created until they are reinvested? That's a mouthful. Mm-hmm. Are there any strategies to reduce paying taxes on benefit or pension income and Social Security benefits? If so, what are they? I'll go over all those. Can I use my self-directed IRA as a hard money lender? Good question. We'll answer that. I have noticed that taxes on new construction properties are generally lower for a year or two before increasing. Why? How to avoid the transfer tax in Florida when buying residential loan rental property and transferring to LLC, land trust costs. Can I take a $100,000 distribution from my 457 plan and contribute it to my housing nonprofit under the 2020 CARES 100% AGI charity contributor? And I meant to make that into a question mark, but we'll get into that. Does getting disaster loan and PPP affect taxes? And I love the fact that they used affect. For whatever reason, the effect of the arrow is to affect the aardvark. That's how I always remember it. So they used it right. If I have two rental properties, should I go for two LLC or keep only one? So that, can I use a self-directed IRA to fund the purchase of distressed mortgage notes using a C Corp? If you're a full-time stock trader, do you qualify for unemployment if you just go bust? I love that. Mm-hmm. I have several rental properties, but no legal entity. Reported a loss in my 2019 taxes. Do I qualify to apply for the EIDL? That's an interesting one. We'll answer that too. How do 1031 exchanges work if properties are held in an LLC? Great question. If I do a 1031 from California property to Nevada property, what taxes do I pay? And then under CARES, I borrow $100,000 from my 401k. Does the remaining balance remain invested as before? And do the repayments I make? In other words, you put money back in, do they get to be invested? So really good questions this time. Love it. And speaking of questions, you can get a lot of questions answered on real estate and real estate taxation at our free event on Saturday, on July 25th. You can join myself and Aaron Adams, and we are going to dive into real estate, not just real estate, but real estate taxation, all this fun stuff. It's an online event. Aaron manages about 3,000 properties and is a really great guy. And we're just going to be talking real estate and then the tax and asset protection components of real estate. So for all you guys that like to ask a million questions on real estate, this is a good event to come to because we're going to dive into cost segregation, real estate professional, 469C7. We're going to go quite a bit into qualified improvement property and a bunch of other fun stuff. This is going to be a blast. Aaron is a kick in the pants. And I promise you, this will be one of those ones where it's not boring. And it'll just be, it's supposed to be all day. We'll record it. So if you can only go half, yes, some of you guys said, what are the hours? 9 to 5 Pacific Standard Time. And so 9 to 5 Pacific Standard Time. And there will be a recording of it too. So register, watch as much as you can, jump on. And we go over everything from energy credits, cost segregation, depreciation, expenses, and accountable plans. So you can get your free pass. I'll just have Patty. She's really good about putting up links. But here's the link if you want to try to spell it out. AndersonAdvisors.com/new-opportunities-real-estate- I'm not going to keep doing that. We'll just make sure that we send you a link. How about that? All right. Question and answer. We have a bunch of questions already. This is going to be fun to answer. Here's the ones that are coming in live. And so we're just going to knock a few of these out, if that's okay. Number one, what is the best entity for private lending other than an IRA or 401k for lawsuit protection and tax savings? So, Jeff, whenever you're doing private lending, I typically want an entity between me and the investor or the debtor. So this is how it looks. I have my cash here in a box. That's usually an LLC. It loans the money to another box, either a corp or something out. And this is going to be the lender. And this is dealing with all those wonderful people who I like to call plaintiffs, right? Those are the people that could possibly come after you. And what happens is there's low cash in this entity and there's lots of cash in this entity, and this is a loan. So if any of these guys over here get, you know, say, hey, Dodd-Frank, or hey, you know, I'm not going to pay you back, and you discriminate, like there's whatever they claim against you, and I, you know, and you really, you caused me to take a predatory loan at 10%, you know, and they make silly allegations. You want to be able to not have your cash exposed. So that's how I would do that one. Number two, is there any extension for corporate taxes that were due July 15th, originally due April 15th? Yes, Barbara. Yeah, you can file an extension, but I think you had to have filed it last week. If you didn't, the rule with corporations is it wouldn't have been an S corp because the S corp would have been due in March.
Right.
But if it's a C corp, then your only penalties are if it owes tax. So, but you missed the extension deadline. Yes, if you have time to answer the question, taxpayer passed away in 2019. He had a loss in excess of basis of an S corp. His wife inherited his interest in the S corp. Does she carry over his loss in excess of the basis? Would it make a difference if he gave her his interest in the S corp? Thank you, Robin. Realistically, if it's a husband and wife and they're filing a joint return, it's going to be on the return anyway, right?
Right. So the income loss of the S corporation should flow through to the shareholder via K-1. So that loss should already be on the 1040 and carrying forward.
Yeah.
Carrying forward there.
And then she said, or she said, would it make a difference if he gave his interest? And that makes me think of somebody going back in time. Don't worry about that. You're still going to get it. they share themselves the basis steps up on the date of passing, mm-hmm. unless they're in a community property state, the whole thing steps up. Otherwise, his portion, assuming that they jointly own, unless he owns it 100%, gets a little more complicated if you're in a separate property state. But the losses are going to stay on the return.
The losses stay, yeah.
Let's see. Should I still apply for real estate professional status if you have an unrelated full-time W job but meet all the criteria? Holy schmoly. You'd have to do over, you have a full-time job, you'd have to do about 2,001 hours of real estate. Maybe you do, in which case you don't actually apply for it. You just say you are. So, wow. Have you ever seen anybody like, how many hours in a year are there? Like, if you're doing 2,000 hours.
Full-time work hours, what, 2,080 hours, something like that?
That's if you're working 40 hours a week.
Right,
so full-time. You'd have to be doing 80 hours a week.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of.
I've seen it.
Yeah.
Hey, you keep those contemporaneous records in the log.
Yeah, as long as you keep track of it, you're good. But I'd still suggest taking some time off and relaxing and enjoying life a little.
Maybe sometimes.
No, hey, if you're one of those people. All right, if I have an empty plot of land, if I sell it and have a loss, am I able to write off the loss of my taxes? Tony, what do you think?
Yeah, but it's going to be the type of loss we're talking about. So it's going to be treated as a capital loss. It's a capital asset, so it's going to be deductible. That loss would be deductible against any other capital gains or up to $3,000 against your ordinary income. Is what they give you, at least on the 1040.
Isn't that weird? Yeah, when you have a land, you're not, I mean, I guess you're not depreciating it, so you're not creating passive loss. This is a capital loss if you sell it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Now, would your analysis change if that empty lot was residential property that you bought next to your house and you were intending to expand your house onto it?
No, but two things happen there. Now, if we have passive losses, mm-hmm. associated with that property that got suspended, you are going to be able to release those passive activity losses against that disposal of that asset as long as you hadn't aggregated all of your multiple properties. In that case, I'm getting into something else.
You just blew their heads off. But I was just thinking, if I bought it as a personal property.
Oh, personal property.
Yeah, so if I had my residence, and I bought the land behind it thinking that one day I was going to build a pool. And then I said, not going to build a pool. Mm-hmm. And the lot, well, in this case, it's going down in value. So they're just like, I'm going to sell my house and I'm going to sell the lot. You wouldn't get to take the loss if it was personal property. So this is only if it's,
well,
right?
This correct. That would be if it was business use property. I suppose if you separated out that land behind your house and, you know, held it out for rent, people could put signs on it or whatever, what have you. Now you've changed it. Now you do have a loss you can possibly take if your land decreased in value.
Yeah, except that if you changed it, it would be the value on the date of changing it.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, this is no, see, this is where it gets, this is why accountants have so much fun. Because we could say, what about this? What about this? All right. So we have lots of Q&A. So the answer is you're going to get to write it off, but it might not be as quickly as you would like. So if you sell land, you're going to have a capital loss. And you can use up that capital loss, $3,000 per year against your
per year.
Income. Unless you have capital gain, in which case you can use all that carry forward capital loss, which is odd. We see that periodically. I just had a gal that I was talking to, and she was trying to do either a 1031 exchange or possibly give it to charity. She had a piece of property and she was freaked out about $100,000 worth of gain. And it turned out we look and she has a loss carry forward of about $122,000
in
capital loss carry forward. I was like, what are you doing? You got this big old loss carry forward. I can use that. Yeah.
And now you're the hero.
It means that they go someplace else. Usually what that means is, now I got the answer.
Yeah.
She is. All right. When transferring residential unit purchase under my personal name to LLC, what expenses are transferable to the LLC, meaning reimbursable to me for my personal expenses like prepaid taxes, insurance, HOA, et cetera? Yeah, I don't think you're going to have to worry about reimbursing them. If you paid them, you're just going to take those as expenses on your personal return. So chances are if you had expenses and you're transferring into a holding entity, it's flowing back onto your return anyway. So you're going to end up taking that. That's not you know, the only time you get into the reimbursable expenses are when you're using a corporation. For PPP loan, period to consider should be salary expenses incurred for a day to be computed or period when salary paid. Also, I had pay more salaries in a particular period last year. Can I be covered in seasonal employee? That's an interesting. So to make that make sense to everybody who's listening, when you get a paycheck protection program loan, you have a period of forgiveness. It's either 8 weeks or 24 weeks, and you get to choose to use the actual period or when your payroll period starts. So the first period after you get funded for payroll, it could start the 8 weeks so that you're not missing out or having to do a weird payroll. And the way that they calculate it is off of the, when you did your PPP loan, that's how you're going to have to calculate, because that's how they, that's what they calculated the loan on. They calculated it on the, probably your 2019 taxes. Mm-hmm. And if you had an average amount, that was how they calculated. It was a 2.5 times your average amount. That's what you're going to be using for determining your payoff, if that makes sense. And then your payoff is based off of either your average number of employees for the 12-month period, the 2019 period, and I think it may actually include January or something like that. I think you go back.
I think it does.
I think it goes, yeah. Or you use the average number of employees extrapolated from January to February 15th. There's like a weird thing, and I may be butchering that a little bit, but it's you have kind of choices, so I don't know exactly.
Yeah, the loan, it was based on the 2019 payroll or January, February of 2020 is what it was.
Yeah, January. So is it the full January and February?
January, okay. February of 2020.
So they use that to determine the loan amount, and then the forgiveness would right. be the number of employees probably from that average number.
But there was
years.
A change on the number of employee piece of it, right, with the Paycheck Protection Program Flexibility Act.
Yeah, well, they definitely changed it as to who would qualify, but you still have mm-hmm. the number. So let's say I had 200.
In the calculation.
Yeah, let's say I had 220 employees. They just calculated that if somebody was a full-time person and they wouldn't come back and there was a reason for it, COVID reason, then mm-hmm. you count them as an employee even if you didn't pay them. Anyway.
Right, yes.
We won't dive into that stuff. We'll lose our minds. All right, can I set up a hedge fund? This is Tony's favorite question. She says, who's asking about a hedge fund? Why'd you pick that question? And I was like, because it said hedge fund. I don't know. That's kind of cool. Can one set up a hedge fund or other entity where you can trade your stocks so you're not taxed as long as the proceeds stay in the fund you created until they are reinvested?
Hedge funds, as I understand it, are usually operating in an LLC, tax the partnership, or a limited partnership, which mm-hmm. is going to flow through to the owner's tax return. So you're going to pay the tax on the gain of the trades made in that hedge fund as a flow through entity. So I don't see where a reinvestment or are they asking to defer the gains until they reinvest it? I don't see that you'd be able to do that.
No. So when I look at this, when somebody says hedge fund, I always think, we're just pulling words out of our memories.
Yeah, but then you make me look into it.
Yeah, I like that. But I immediately think, oh, this is for you. This is your IRA or your 401k. So I just look at that and say, you're probably trading in a exempt account. And your exempt accounts are your IRAs, 401ks, Roth IRA, where you never have to pay tax ever again. You don't have to pay it when you take it out. Roth 401k, Roth IRA, obviously, and your 457s, 403bs, even your 501c3s can fit into that category as long as they're being used for their charitable purpose. But anyway, somebody actually is doing this more. The question is, how can you get in and out of your stocks without triggering taxes until a distribution is actually made? For example, like in a traditional IRA, you can buy and sell stocks without worrying. Da 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 da. So, is there an entity that you can trade stocks in? And the question is, how can you get in and out of stocks without triggering taxes until the distribution is made? And there really isn't one, other than your IRAs, 401ks, and exempt
outside
entities.
Of what you've mentioned.
No. Yep. So, you know, so the idea is perhaps you should be looking at an exempt account if you're trading a lot, making a lot of money, and don't want to get killed on the taxes until you actually use it. Either make it for a charitable purpose, or use a retirement account. And perhaps the best retirement account for you, if you're going to make a lot, would be using a Roth style account, either a Roth 401k if your income's too high, or a Roth IRA if you're able to invest in it. And if you can't, then you do a backdoor IRA to get money in there, or there's some fancy ways to make after-tax contributions, even to a 401k, and roll it into a Roth 401k. You could put about 57, I think it is, this year. I can't remember.
That actually comes up quite a bit in platinum.
Yeah. So you toss it in there. What you're doing is basically saying, hey, I'm never going to pay tax on this ever again, and then I don't have to care, and you could trade like crazy. Almost said his name, so I just, no. Mr. All right. Somebody says, if one of them spent 750 hours a week on top of a full-time job, if not, what are other options? I think if it's a husband and wife, only one of them has to hit the 750 hours, and it's not a week, it's a month. And it's the rule is 469C7 that says your passive losses from real estate become active losses, ordinary losses, if you are a real estate professional. And to reach real estate professional status, one spouse on a joint return or the taxpayer on a single return has to spend at least 750 hours and more than half of their personal service time on real estate or real estate activities. So construction, development, sales, whatever, real estate related. And you have to materially participate on your properties. So it's not as onerous as you think. We have clients all the time where one spouse is, you know, practicing physician or, you know, is a very, has a big job and a high W-2 income, and the other spouse qualifies as a real estate investor, and they're buying their real estate to offset the W-2 income.
Well, I suppose you can add to that, which doesn't happen all the time, that if you are a more than 5% owner of the business that you're getting the W-2 income from, and it's related to real estate, and the services you're performing for that job is related to real estate, that's also includable.
Yeah, it's whatever. Yeah, the only time that you have an issue, the 5% rule, it's 5 or 10, I can't remember.
Five.
So as long as you own 5%, then any business, even if you're an employee of it, you can count that towards your time.
We run into that with our realtors.
Yeah, realtors are interesting because the code says broker. And so some people think that real estate agents don't count, and that's not true. There's actually a tax court case on it where they said broker just means helping people locate and buy or sell property. So you get it. All right, lots of questions that are coming in, but I'm going to skip you guys for a little bit. Are there any strategies to reduce paying taxes on benefit or pension income and Social Security benefits? If so, what are they? This is all you. I can see you're excited about this. You like that one?
Well, I mean, I was looking at that one. And I thought, well, we're talking about a couple of different things there. We're talking about distributions from a retirement plan, which will be taxable income most of the time, unless we're talking about a Roth. And then on the other hand, we're talking about Social Security benefits, which may or may not be taxable, depending on your income, your other income that you have on your return. So if you have any W-2 income, any other income, basically we're looking at a calculation that's 50% of your Social Security benefits plus any of the other income you have on your return.
And that pushes you up to where your Social Security benefits are taxable, right?
Yeah. And depending on how much that is, we can be 50% taxable, or I believe it's 85% taxable.
Yep. If they go over a certain threshold, like $32,000.
Yeah. And
it's silly.
Yeah.
They tax your Social Security benefits, guys. That's what's crazy. But if you don't want them to, we just talked about a whole bunch of ways to knock them down. You guys might not even realize it. Become a real estate professional, buy real estate, keep your, it'll offset your income. And then all of a sudden your Social Security benefits and your pension income are going to be below the standard deduction.
Right.
The other thing you do is, depending on what type of income you have, if you have stock, you could actually, as long, like a married couple under $80,000 a year, your long-term capital gains tax bracket is zero. And so if you're making $50,000 a year, you could sell a bunch of stuff and not have to pay tax on it. and buy it right back. You know, like if you want your Amazon, you're like, oh my gosh, I just had a bunch of growth in Amazon because you love that company and you love giving Bezos free money. I love that. No, I like Amazon, but it's not as an investment. But let's just say that's your thing. You could sell it and buy it right back. And there's a wash sale rule for losses, but there is no wash sale rule for gain. And so you can make that non-taxable. The other thing you could do is give money away. This year, you can give up to 100% of your adjusted gross income to charity. And it could be your charity for all we care. As long as it's a public charity, you're good. If it's a private foundation, you have a limitation to 30%, but you could still give stuff away.
Right.
Other things you could do, what else can we do to lower our taxes? Those are the big ones. Oil and gas.
Thanks for taking all of those and then throwing it to me.
Well, okay. Oil and gas. I'll throw oil and gas. No. You can do oil and gas and take that loss too. You could open up a business and you can incur losses. And if you're going to buying equipment and accelerate the depreciation, and you can, you're not going to create a loss with that, mm-hmm. but you can go to zero with that.
I also like the idea of splitting of income. If you're running any kind of business activities, mm-hmm. such as rental real estate and things like that, you can split income off to maybe a C corporation or even create a further loss on the rentals to your point of the real estate professional and taking those losses. Mm-hmm. You can cost seg to create a further loss to reduce your income on the personal tax return and get that down. So, yeah, there's a ton of things we can do.
These are softballs, guys. See, that's the thing is a lot of people look at this and they're so used to the accountant saying, well, there's not a lot you can do. You have high W-2. Oh, there's not a lot you can do. There's always something you can do.
Yep.
Sometimes you have to create it, though. So somebody just wrote, what are the tax benefits of setting up a charity? Charity doesn't pay any tax and you can give it assets. So I'll use the example of me just because I like to use me as the example. End of the year, if I want to lower my tax bill, I stroke a check to my charity. I have two of them. Or I give it property. So I've given it stock that I had almost no basis in that became worth a lot. And so I just transferred the stock to it. And mm-hmm. I got my write-off based on the fair market value of that. It was publicly traded stock. I bought it when it was private, waited my period. It had gone way up. And I gave it to charity.
Yep.
And I was able to take the deduction based on the value of it, and I didn't have to recognize any capital gains. I have also given houses to charity, and you're allowed to deduct the fair market value as long as you've held it over a year. So there's a ton of tax benefits for having a charity, and you can go out and get charitable donations too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So can you give to a charitable organization you personally own? Nobody owns a charity, Joyce. So as long as it's a public charity and it's doing something, this is what's weird. We work with people all the time that do real estate. Low to moderate income housing is a charitable activity. Residential assisted living is a charitable activity. Veteran housing is a charitable activity. Housing for autistic children or autistic adults is a charity. And it's absolutely. And yeah, can you set up a public charity? Yeah, where you're the main contributor. Yeah, for 5 years, Leo. After 5 years, you have the public test, and they're looking at how much income it's bringing in and how much you're contributing. And there's a 33% rule or third, I think, is that has to come from the activities or from outside parties. But it's not fatal. It just becomes a private foundation. So then your charitable donations become less, and your ability to interact with it become a little bit less. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I'm Hobarting. You can jump in on these. Here's a good one. A foreign investor buys a property in December of 2019, rents it on February of 2020. Does he have to pay taxes on 2021?
So we have a rental
that doesn't get put into service until after the tax year. Buys the property at the end of the year, doesn't mm-hmm. put it into service until February of 2020.
So then, yes, if you have a rental that was placed in service February 2020, you had a tenant who was actually paying rent, then you are going to be paying taxes if we can't get that rental income down for you.
But on the December 2019, do they have to pay any tax?
There's no tax in December of 2019.
Yeah, there's no tax there. So you're good if they bought it at the end of the year. Usually you're not filing a return at the end of the year, unless you have an entity where you have startup expenses and things like that, and then we may capture them.
if you actually did place the service, for example, or place the property in service, for example, in 2019,
you'd have some.
Then we would want to go ahead and take advantage of the expenses that we paid associated with that property and be able to take those losses.
Otherwise, you didn't have a property in service until 2020. And then when do they have to pay taxes? You would pay taxes on any of that income in 2021, unless you have to do quarterlies, right?
Right.
And that just depends on whether you anticipate making money. The question that another one that's being asked, and I apologize, guys. I know some of you guys get mad that I answer a lot of live questions, but it's very interesting for me because they're related. So somebody's asking about depreciation. They don't understand depreciation. Where's the depreciation? All right. If I purchase a property and over a span of 3 months improve the property, what is my depreciation? I understand 27 and a half years for single family residence and mid-month conversion. This is really interesting. So when you have single family residence, the default is 27 and a half years. Mm-hmm. But if you want to create additional deductions, and this is going to, I know we have a question later in the Tax Tuesday that was asking about this, about getting depreciation the first couple of years, you can choose to do what's called a cost segregation and take your 27 and a half year property and divide it into 5, 7, and 15 year property, as well as the 27 and a half. And what that's going to do is it's going to accelerate your depreciation into shorter periods of time. In order to do that, you're going to look at the improvements you put in the property and determine whether they're going to be added to basis or whether they were repairs and they're immediate deductions. You also have a qualified improvement property, right? Mm-hmm. Which you can immediately, or that's 15-year property, right?
15-year.
15-year. So all of those can be accelerated to year one if you want. There's something called accelerated depreciation this year and next year. I think it goes away in
2023.
It starts to phase down?
I believe so.
And what it does, it allows you to write it all off in year one if you want. So if you want to create big fat losses, even if you can't use them, you just carry them forward and you just don't pay any tax on your real estate. It's actually kind of nice. Anyway, I know there's a bunch of others. Let's see. Here's another one. Can I use my self-directed IRA as a hard money lender? What say you, Tony?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Now, here's the one thing is if you're going to loan, remember the earlier question we had where I drew a little bit? This is the same thing. I have IRA that's kind of in a box. The problem is I'm personally responsible for excess liabilities when I have an IRA. So I don't really want to give money to people I don't know. Maybe this is people that they're not disqualified people. They're people that I feel comfortable with. Maybe those people, if it's one or two people, maybe it's a brother or sister where they're not disqualified, but I still know who they are.
Right.
Or maybe it's a friend. But if it's not somebody you know, then you create an LLC inside of the IRA and you're essentially the manager because the IRA holder can be the manager and then it loans out money. And the reason you do that is because there is liability when you're dealing with lending to third parties. If you trip on a law or something, you could find yourself on the hook for everything that you took in and possibly damages. So you want to make sure that you don't step on that landmine. So we'll jump into that. Unless you want to throw anything more on that.
Nope. It was a straightforward. Yeah. You can do lending from a self-directed IRA. I just point out that when we talk about this qualified persons, we're talking about you, your spouse, your children, your parents. So when you throw in, your brother, your sister, a lot of people tend to think that those are also disqualified persons and they're not.
Yeah. The disqualification goes this way, up and down. So grandma, grandpa, kids, spouses, it does not go sideways to your brothers and sisters and their spouses and stuff. So some of your, what would that be? In-law? Stepsister?
Pains.
No, in-law. No, pains. I don't know what those are. Yeah, somebody says you have to be careful that you're not self-dealing. Yep. So there's a whole bunch of questions in here. Do I need to be in a certain income bracket to establish a charity? No. In fact, one of my favorite charities was set up by a gal that had lost her job. She did a TED talk, but it's Camp You Can. And my daughter went out and actually donated time, and it's a camp for epileptic kids. This year is going to be a struggle for them, but Camp You Can, if you want to look them up, it's the, I want to say Northwest You Can Association, Midwest You Can Association. But yeah, she didn't even have a job, and she ended up having a very successful run with the charity, and I hope that it continues. This COVID certainly hurt them, because they do big summer camps for kids every year. So it's obviously been a tough one. But your charity, and we have some that do millions of dollars in donations a year. Probably the top one here is probably 6 million in contributions just in these little charities. So they do a really great job. Here we go. Can prior year real estate PALs, passive activity losses, be carried forward against current year income? If this year is the first time I will qualify as a real estate professional. Rory, fantastic question. So I was a passive real estate investor and I have PALs, and now I'm a real estate professional. Can I use those PALs against my ordinary income if I'm a real estate professional?
No.
No.
No, they're suspended now until you actually dispose of substantially all of the activity.
Yeah. So, Rory, you should be very angry at Tony right now.
Hey.
She said no.
Yeah. I didn't say no.
No, it's unfortunately when you create the loss as to whether it's active or passive. And just because you become active, the loss doesn't become active when you carry it forward. Somebody said schedule, I don't know what this is, file a Schedule E loss, right? Yes, PPP forgiveness. I realize that I don't have to pay it back if I use it for salary, but what forms do I have to fill out? On my taxes about it. Ryan, you don't have to fill any forms. You're filling out a form for the bank. And what they're going to do is get money from the feds, and it's going to, or SBA, and they're going to get that money back. And it's, you're not going to have to recognize it. So there's no tax form on it. So that's the good news. You don't have to do anything. You're just free money. Free money. And here's the thing. I just get mad. So everybody's making fun of the Lakers and all these people for taking the money. The whole idea of the PPP money was to give the businesses the money so these people wouldn't be unemployment. And it doesn't matter how big the company is or whether they had other money. That wasn't the reason they did it. I just think it's ridiculous. All these people have been shamed. All these companies were shamed for taking the money. It was so... it didn't overwhelm the unemployment. And then what happened when everybody started getting beat on? Unemployment's been overwhelmed. In my state here in Nevada, there's people that still haven't gotten unemployment. We've gone through two directors of DETR, the unemployment department here. They basically quit after just realizing that they're swimming upstream and it's really strong currents. It's stinky. It's horrible. All right. Somebody says, can you please give us an update on your thought about the Fed giving any tax concessions for 2019? You had advised us not to file our 2019 taxes till November because you thought it might be some changes. Yep. Do I know of anything? They're going to probably do a payroll tax cut for 2020. For 2019, what this could create is potential losses that you'd be able to carry back. And that's why I said, hey, until we know for certain, let's see what comes out of the Congress. Because I think things are going to get worse before they get better from the small employer standpoint. What do you think?
I would agree with that. Let's just agree.
Yeah, I know it gets tough. So we don't know what Congress is going to do. Mm-hmm. And what we know for certain is that none of us have a crystal ball. So I say give yourself time on your 2019 taxes, because it would really stink if you filed them and you were able to carry back a loss from 2020. My statement, and since day one, is just let businesses have back some of the money they've already paid. Somebody says, we know what Congress will do. It will spend the money. Yep, absolutely. But what they really need to do is allow us to keep some of the money. The businesses need to keep the money. We don't need to give it to Congress and then have them decide who gets it. Because frankly, I've been talking to a bunch of the CPAs and planners on a forum, and well over $1.2 billion was given to people that weren't entitled to the stimulus money.
Oh, right.
And that's just the ones we know of, mm-hmm. plus a whole bunch of folks that don't live here. It's been ridiculous as to what they've done. So I don't want to have, I just think it's ridiculous that, A, they created competitors for businesses. You pretty much can't hire somebody under $15 an hour because the unemployment that they've been receiving from the feds is higher than $15 an hour. So it really created a situation that's negative, including for us, because I can tell you from firsthand experience, we tried to hire people during this period of time. We've been just busier than get out because everybody was going after the PPP loans, the EIDL loans, and we had bookkeeping craziness, and everybody needed their records for 2019 done in a 2-week period. We couldn't hire people because they were saying they made more on unemployment. So it's crazy. Somebody says gifts aren't gifts non-taxable. No. So a certain dollar amount is an unreportable, untaxable. Otherwise, you're using a calculation and you're taking it against your lifetime exclusion, which you file a tax return for when you make the gift. The recipient doesn't have to pay tax, but sometimes the giftor has to pay tax.
Right. And you might have a requirement to file a gift tax return depending upon the amount of the gift that you gifted that year. But again, that return is informational, tracking your lifetime gift exclusion.
Yeah, yes. All right, let's go on to more. I think we've answered three questions thus far. We probably are a little behind. Sorry. I've noticed that taxes on new construction properties are generally lower for a year or two before increasing. Why? You can answer that one.
The property taxes are based on the assessed value of the home. I'm not really sure why it would be different for new construction.
I wonder whether it's they're asking about property taxes or whether they're just talking about taxes in general. If the property taxes, it's going to be on the assessment, and sometimes the assessor's office is going to be a year or two behind you. And then all of a sudden it's going to go up because they're basing it off the neighborhood that's around you and the square footage, and they have to update their records.
They also like to tack all kinds of other things onto there.
Yep. And so it's just, yeah, so it's going to take them a little bit. A lot of you guys are looking at it. But here's the other thing. Taxes in general are lower when you do new construction because it's really easy to segregate out what portions are 5, 7, and 15-year property, and then you can rapidly depreciate them. So what's going to happen is when you do any new improvements, or if you buy a property, you have it in service, and then you decide to fix it all up, look at a cost seg, guys. And a cost seg is a fancy way of saying an engineer is going to come in and tell me how much my electric system is, how much my doorknobs are, how much the fixtures in the building are, how much the flooring is, how much the cabinets are, how much the sidewalk is, and the shrubbery around the outside, and my fence, and everything else. And they're going to be able to tell you those items, everything I just mentioned, has a lower lifespan than the property as a whole. And every one of those will be depreciated much faster, generally twice as fast plus, than if you just took normal depreciation. Most accountants just do normal depreciation. I just love this. Somebody says, could you please call up Texas and tell them to drop their property taxes? Oh, Andy, you're all the California folks are joining you in Texas in the property tag. No, I'm just teasing. We love our Californians. But yes, Texas is known for having some high property taxes. I used to own rental. Actually, I still do own a bunch of rental properties there. I always think like I used to, but no, we sold our Dallas stuff and we have a bunch in Houston. Somebody says I was mean. Sherry, what was I mean about? I forget. I see so many mean things. Major maintenance costing over $10,000 for countertops, flooring, paint, etc. I thought the limit for expensing was under $5,000. So Mina is talking about
De minimis,
but also what is that called? The temporary, property regs. So why don't you explain de minimis? People love that.
Well, the de minimis safe harbor is actually $2,500. There is a $5,000, but that's if you have, I believe, the audited financials, you get up to five. But typically what you'll have is the $2,500 amount. So if you have repairs or improvements that invoice for under $2,500, you're going to be able to deduct that in the current tax year, not required to capitalize that as an improvement.
Yeah, and the other thing, Mina, is everything you just mentioned there, again, would have a life expectancy of less than 20 years. So there's two sides to this. Number one, if you retire an item like a roof and you've depreciated it for 10 years and you have to replace your roof, you take whatever portion of the 27 and a half that would have been allocated to it. Like you actually have to do a little bit of analysis and say, how much was that roof worth when I bought the house? You get to write all that off the day that you put it out of service. So you tear the old roof off. if there was an extra $5,000 or $6,000, boom, you nail it. And then when you put the new roof on, you're writing it off again. All the items you just mentioned are all under 20 years. And so, yeah, you could bonus depreciate it when you're figuring it out, but you have to change your accounting method. So if you go with the default, just plain vanilla, the MACRS, Modified Accelerated Cost Recovery System, or whatever it's called, then you're at 27 and a half years for residential, 39 years for non-residential. Commonly, a lot of people call it commercial. So you can, on those ones, you just change your accounting method. It's a form, what, 3115?
Yes.
3115, you have a cost segregation study done, which if you just did the build out, it's really easy. They're going to look at your invoices and figure out what, like if it says countertop, boom, they already know what portion that is. And then you could accelerate the depreciation. And you could elect to depreciate, accelerate the depreciation on 5-year property, 7-year property, the 15-year property, or all of it. But you could just say, hey, I'm going to accelerate the 15-year property. I'm going to let the 5 and 7 be as they are. So,
which I see people doing more after 2023 when we're not getting 100% bonus depreciation.
Yeah, I could see them taking it.
Yeah.
Because it's going to go to 80, then 60.
Yeah.
I hope Congress extends that. Is it cumulative repairs in a year? No, Tian. It's actually per item and per area. So like your roof, if you're going to replace your roof for $7,500, you're not supposed to go get 3 separate invoices for $2,500.
Yeah, I don't want to see an invoice for every shingle, okay?
But technically, you can, it's de minimis. I mean, so if it's on a different area, so you can sometimes get creative as to how you're breaking it up. So somebody says when starting a RAL from a major conversion, wouldn't everything in it be subject to cost seg and move all the losses up? Yeah, David, that's exactly why you do it. Not all of it, but the furniture, the when you improve the house and there's betterment, then maybe not. But most of the items that you're putting in it, yes. And especially if you're fixing it up. See, some of you guys are getting it. What are the limits for bonus depreciation? There are none. Mina, you could create $1 million worth of loss and not pay tax for a really long time. That's why we always laugh in the accounting circles. They always say, if you're paying taxes, it's because you don't own enough real estate.
I actually just did an analysis for a guy and looked at the NOL carryback for the 5-year period, how much he'd have to buy in property.
You're going to have to explain that to these guys. But
right. So we looked at, he had already been working with a real estate agent. We looked at how much he was going to be spending on real estate and what the improvements would be associated with that. And we looked at all of that. We did the average reclass of a cost segregation and came up with the amount he would have to spend in real estate to basically wipe out all of his taxes if we carried it back for the NOL 5-year carryback period that we got with CARES. It's a really interesting calculation. And we did have, he's in California. So we did have an interesting calculation there when it came to California. But yeah, it can be a very powerful thing if you're willing to go out there and, you know, do the work, get the real estate, put the investment in there, rather invest that money in the real estate rather than leaving it with the federal government in the form of taxes.
Yep. And what Tony just said is that you can create a loss. And if you qualify as a real estate professional, that's an ordinary loss that can be carried back now 5 years. So if you did it for 2019 or at least 2020, you could go back to year 2014 or 2015.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And you could wipe and you could get back some of the taxes that you've already paid. And so some people are doing this. You're not the like it's not the first time we've seen people penciling it out, saying, how much do I need to buy?
Right.
And that's called having a tax appetite. And for those of you who raise money for your syndications, be thinking about this too, because they have to be in the general partnership partner group, or it needs to be an LLC. And they need to be careful about not becoming a passive, like they really do need to be part of the management group in order for them to continue to receive that ordinary loss. Mm-hmm. But you can go out and take down an apartment complex by levering it up and rapidly depreciating it. And all of a sudden, that's worth an extra 30% because they're going back and getting all their taxes back from last 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually really cool.
Yeah, it was really fun.
Next one. How to avoid the transfer tax in Florida when buying residential loan rental property and transferring to an LLC? Land true costs? Question mark.
Land trust costs.
Yeah.
So, well, that's going to depend on a couple of things, right? Where the how the LLC is taxed, because some states and counties do have exemptions for LLCs that are single member LLCs and grantor type trusts also. But I did look at Florida, and specifically if for them, if there was no consideration for the transfer, then they don't assess a transfer tax.
Yep. There's a statute that lists out all the ones. I think it's 12B4-014. There we go. Where you can look it up and it lists all the exceptions. Mm-hmm. And if you're just transferring it to an LLC, the only daughter's hitting me up over here. Anybody who has kids, you know that they like to call you three times in a row whenever mm-hmm. they want something, and then it's usually something like, "Can I have money?"
It's money.
But the mortgage is the big one. So you always use a land trust to avoid the mortgage stamp tax. If you're just transferring property and you own it free and clear, then we don't even have to worry about that. You can skip the land trust. Otherwise, use the land trust. But either way, you can get it. Somebody says, apologize, missed this part. It's carry back for 5 years for losses for real estate professionals due to COVID-19. No, it was passed in the CARES Act. So as of February 15th, they said you can carry back losses, but you can carry back losses for 2018 and 2019. Right. We can go back. Like, we could actually, you can go grab and elect to take back 2018 losses now to 2013. You can take 2019 losses and carry them back to 2014. And then you keep rolling
and
them forward.
And so on and so forth.
Yeah. So it's pretty potent. And yeah, it's new, but it doesn't have to, it's not COVID related, other than it's relief that they gave us to allow us to do that because of COVID. Somebody says, hey, Toby, do you have a post an educational site indicating acceptable deductions or expenses for a charitable organization? It's actually just grab tax-wise. It's all the same for a for-profit or a not-for-profit. They're all the same for the IRS. It's just we don't really care about deductions for charities because they don't pay any tax.
Right.
So it literally doesn't matter. The one good thing is if, like, you have a church or something, you get the allowance for the home, the parsonage allowance. Like, what is that, 105? Where the minister can live in a house for free that's owned by the charity.
Right.
So we do.
And we do see that.
We do see that.
Yeah.
We have some fun clients that you see that on. They're actually really cool. And yeah, every time I see that, I go, dang, I want to be a church.
Yeah, I want to be a church.
They don't even have to file a tax return.
So. Make Anderson a religion?
Yeah. I said I was going to buy an old church and call it the Church of Profit. That's probably, I think I'm damned the day that I do that.
Probably.
All right. Can I take a $100,000 distribution from my 457 plan? That's a government plan. Mm-hmm. And contribute it to my housing nonprofit under the 2020 CARES AGA charity. Gosh, I just butchered that. So here's the deal. If you take $100,000 out of your 457, you're allowed to do that if you've been affected by COVID. Pretty much everybody gets this. If you have an IRA, 401k, 403b, 457, you should be able to get that $100,000 out. What the CARES Act did is made it so you can deduct 100% of your adjusted gross income by giving it to charity. So with that, what do you say?
Yes. In order to be able to take the 100K distribution from the 457, you have to have been affected by COVID-19, but you don't have to use the funds for COVID-19 related expenses. It's good cash. You can go ahead and take advantage of the 100% ADI.
Now you're paying back that $100,000 distribution by the end of 2022. I think it's 2022. It's 3 years, within three years. Three tax years. So,
but they did it really weird.
Yep. So, and then they tried to apply the old Katrina payback period. I still think that you don't they're telling you that you're supposed to take, if you take $100,000 out, you're supposed to recognize $30,000, $33,000 and some odd change a year for 3 years. And then the fourth year, when you pay it back, then you file amended returns, which that sounds stupid. And that sounds like a bureaucracy. And that's not what the rule says. The rule says is it's ratably they use, not pro rata. They use ratably over 3 years. So if you pay it back, it's a trustee to trustee transfer. There was never a tax in the beginning. I would just say, as long as you pay it back by the end of 2022, you don't have to pay any interest or anything, any penalties.
Well, I was wondering if they might even walk that back because they're applying rules from a smaller scale event.
Yes.
to such a larger scale event. Yeah,
it's
comparatively.
It's a bureaucracy. Yeah. Congress passes the law. I was on with Johnny Tobacco today, which is pretty funny. That's his name. And we're talking about the PPP loans. And it's really crazy that a law says, hey, you don't have to recognize this as income. And then they say, but you can't deduct what you spend it on. And that's not what the law says. The law says you don't have to recognize it as income. And then it's silent on anything else.
Right.
And you have to spend it on certain expenses. The PPP loan is for salaries and for certain types of interest and rents and utilities and healthcare expenses or the benefits as part of your salary. And all of a sudden, you're not supposed to be able to write that off. It's just the bureaucracy just does stupid things. So anyway,
he gets worked up every time.
I get gripey. Let's see. Transfer and recordation. Can you answer that for DC-2? How much do you need to charge to amend old returns? I would just reach out, have one of our guys take a look. What we'll do is we do consults for free for people, and we could always see whether we could do anything to help an old situation. Part of our Platinum program is we do a 2-year tax review, and it's a formal tax review where Tony actually oversees that. I didn't think about that. I'm have you sitting next to me because Jeff manages the tax department, and Tony here manages all the professionals that are the planners,
yep. Really.
And so Tony's team is a bunch of tax attorneys, CPAs, and you're hurting cats.
It's a bunch of geeks.
Bunch of geeks?
Myself included, proudly.
Yes. Everybody needs a geek. Anyway, so they'll take a look. And yeah, when you're doing changing properties, usually the issue isn't so much most states don't tax. The one state we have an issue with is Pennsylvania. And they want to transfer. They want to hit that transfer tax on everything. Everybody else we can get around. But sometimes you have to use a trust to effectuate it. So, and especially if you have a loan, we don't want to tick off the lender either. Mm-hmm. So it's easier to use a trust than it is to go straight into an LLC when you have a traditional lender. All right. Lots of other questions. Not everyone's making sense. And somebody says, may I still apply for backtracked unemployment if I'm a residential broker in New York? I don't believe there's a restriction. If you're entitled to it, I think that you can go back. And somebody says, if you're a sole member LLC, the federal, that's a sole proprietorship. Mm-hmm. And the federal system, that payroll pandemic uninsurance, PUA, what does the dang thing stand for? Pandemic Unemployment Assistance. There we go.
Okay, there you go.
That $600 a week is for you. They actually made it specifically so that it would cover sole proprietors. And somebody says, I have a $120,000 idle. I'm not sure if I need it. Take it. You pay interest, but it's 3.75 and you have a payment deferral. I'm not sure if the interest is deferred for the first year. Or is it just,
I do not believe the interest is deferred.
I think you're paying the interest, but it's 3.75, but you're not making any payments for the first year. So I would always say that's pretty cheap money, but that's me. If you don't have a use for it, then don't take it. But
well, you take it. You can always give it back.
Right. Yeah. He's just saying he doesn't want to pay interest on it. Does getting disaster loan and PPP affect taxes?
They're loans.
Mm-hmm.
So not really.
What if the disaster loan, the EIDL loan, what if they gave you an advance on it, an emergency advance, some free money, $10,000? Do you have to pay tax on that?
I don't believe you do.
Nope. And it goes against your PPP. You can have an EIDL loan and a PPP. Now, let's say that they give you a PPP and it's $1 million and you meet all the tests and you don't have to pay it back. Do you have to pay any tax on that?
No.
Yeah, you do not. So it's free money. The only thing is that then they tell you can't write it off. And I want to write it off.
Well,
I think they're wrong.
I agree with you.
And Grassley agrees with us. I get annoyed by these bureaucrats. Again, Congress gives us something and then the bureaucrats try to work so hard to take it away. Mm-hmm. I think they were like, come on, help these folks out. You know, 40% of businesses are probably going to tank by the end of this thing. Somebody says, can you use the PPP or EIDL to buy residential property? No, you have to use it for specific purposes. In the case of the PPP, it's for payroll, for benefits, for utilities, things like that, to make it forgivable. If you don't use it for those things, it's just a loan. And then for the idle, you actually have to use it for the damage done to your business. So what you end up doing is you take the money that you get from the PPP and the idles and you put them in a separate account and you use it to pay all your regular expenses. And then if you have any extra money in your account, that's what you use to buy a residential property with. So if I have $2 and I can buy a residential property with one, I just have to make sure I'm not buying that residential property with the $1 that came from the idle loan.
Right.
Somebody says, what are the rules for the under $100,000 distribution? Do you have to show much of a loss to defer payments? No, you don't. It's just automatic. So you get to take the money out of the IRA, the 401k, whatever it is, and you don't have a early withdrawal penalty ever. The 10% is completely not going to be there. And then you don't pay tax if you pay it back. It's treated as a trustee-to-trustee transfer. So if you read the CARES Act, it just says, hey, if you pay it back by the end of the third tax year, it's treated as a trustee-to-trustee transfer. That's specifically what they say, which means it's not even a rolled out to you. They treat it as though you transferred it IRA to IRA or 401k to IRA or IRA to 401k. It's treated as though it never hit you. Somebody says it can be used to pay back business loans. How do I substantiate loss? What qualifies? Well, Mick, if you have loans and you're paying interest, and I believe that there's a restriction that it has to be for equipment or whatnot.
Well, what are we talking about?
This would be idle.
The idle.
Payback loans. And they're saying, hey, my business loan is a private loan.
If we're talking about a shareholder loan to a corporation in idle, there's very narrow set of circumstances as to whether you can use the idle loan to repay that. Number one, you had to have loaned the money to the business to keep it afloat after the disaster. And number two, you have to be in a position where repayment of that loan or not repaying that loan to the shareholder would cause the shareholder undue hardship. So if you're meeting those two things, then you could use the idle to repay the shareholder loan, but it's circumstantial.
Yep.
So
you nailed it. And then what if you don't pay back your loan, the PPP?
What if you don't pay back the PPP?
Mm-hmm. It becomes a 1% loan paid back over 5 years with a 1 year deferral.
Oh, you mean what if it wasn't forgiven?
Yeah. What if you didn't forgive it? Yeah. What if you didn't spend it on it?
Like,
what if you fired all your employees anyway?
Then you're probably in trouble with the bank.
Yeah. Somebody says the idle promissory note stated that you can buy inventory for your business. If you flip houses, isn't that buying house inventory? Technically, yes. If you're a flipper, you could do that. If you don't pay back the idle loan, by the way, it doesn't matter. It's a 3.75 30-year loan. Like, they're going to come after you and grab, like, they're usually going to, they do a UCC-1, so they're going to secure it with all your business assets.
Which does not include real estate.
Yeah, it doesn't include real estate. So that's, but, and then you said, what if you didn't pay it back the qualified distribution, then it becomes taxable. It's supposed to be taxable over 3 years. So what would happen if you didn't pay it back? You'd have additional tax in year 1, 2, and 3. So you'd have it for 2020, 2021, and 2022. You'd have equal amounts of tax.
But if you're under 59 and a half, you still don't get the 10% penalty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you never get that penalty. So we're answering all these questions that I didn't flip it on. Somebody says, can you use PPP or idle to pay New York State or IRS taxes you owe? I don't think so.
IRS, you can.
You can?
Yes. At first, it didn't say that. At first, it said you couldn't use it to pay any federal or government debts. And IRS stepped in and said, you're out of your mind.
I know.
And then IRS became an exception.
So apparently, you could do the IRS. They must have done that in guidance after.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It was not there before.
Yeah. When I first read the statute, I was just like, oh. And trust me, there's a lot of these questions out. And if anybody says they know the answers, they don't.
Or it'll change.
Because it changes on, quite literally, there was a period of time there when it was changing every single day. And is it the IRS for PPP or idle? It's for the idle, for sure. The PPP, I don't think so.
For what part? IRS? Or no.
The IRS payment is idle loans, right?
Correct.
Yeah, not
for PPP.
Yep.
PPP is very rigid if you want forgiveness.
Yep. All right. If you have two rental properties, should I go for two LLCs or keep it only one? So I can answer this real quick. If you have two rental properties, the question is always going to be how much equity you have in those properties. There's good, better, best. Good is, hey, put it in an LLC. Better is, put it in LLC with insurance. Best is put it into LLCs and still have insurance, but you don't want to subject one property to the other. Let's see. Somebody says, I am a single here. I'm going to go back one and then we're going to hop through some of these questions because I know I'm going long. I am a single member LLC, no salary, but I have debt and materials to buy. Can I apply for a PPP loan? Lily, yes. And what they're going to do is they're going to base it off of your net income for 2019.
Right.
If it's a brand new business, then they're going to look at January and February. And then for the idle, they're going to look at what?
Just 2019.
Just 2019. So you could apply for both if you want.
And this for our single member LLCs, if we're talking about a sole proprietorship, they're looking at the net income of the Schedule C.
Yep.
That's going to be your quote unquote payroll.
All right. Can I use a self-directed IRA to fund the purchase of distressed mortgage notes using a C corp?
Okay. So yeah, you can hold mortgage notes in an IRA. I was not really sure on the using a C corp part.
Mm-hmm. The C corp puts you into a category where you're not going to do the IRA with the C corp unless you're doing a Rob's transaction.
Right.
So I'm just going to nix this one at the inception. Unless you're really going to be buying a lot of notes, I wouldn't even mess with it. It's expensive to do a Rob's transaction. And you could do that with an IRA or a 401k, and you can partner with an IRA or 401k. Anybody who tells you that you can't doesn't know the rules. It's just if you're going to do it, there's a specific way you have to do it. And if you're doing the mortgage notes in a C corp, you're going to be doing what's called a ROBS, a rollover as a business startup, ROBS, and you can look it up if you want. What I would say is just put an LLC. It's called a checkbook LLC, but they call it a checkbook IRA. It's an IRA that owns the LLC. And then you do your lending out of the LLC. So you're keeping it out of your IRA. I think I drew that one up earlier.
You did.
Yep. It's kind of funny how that happens. Somebody says, which state is considered the home state? I want to know because one of the three states has no income tax. Let me see. Did he ask a previous one? No, I don't know. I don't know what they're asking. I guess it would matter where you have the property. Maybe you could elaborate a little bit, David. I'm not certain. Oh, related to personal income, W-2, which state do I pay taxes in if I've lived in three states during the year? Perfect. We answered this once in a previous Tax Tuesdays. You end up choosing the state based off of the facts and circumstances, based off of where you register your vehicles, where your driver's license is, where you spend the most time. And they can actually get down where they're counting how much electricity you're using in a particular state. Because mm-hmm. like California wants you there if you're possibly there. If a state doesn't have income taxes, they may not care at all. Because if you own the properties right. there, you're just paying the property taxes.
Right.
But it is kind of weird.
It is very odd.
And this is the weirdest one. We had this question. You can have a husband and wife live in different states and file a joint return and file two different state income tax returns. It's weird, the questions mm-hmm. we get asked.
You can also end up in a situation where you're just filing non-resident tax returns mm-hmm. In certain other states when you have income sourced in that state. So it just depends.
Here's another good one. Somebody said on the idle, oh, shoot, all my questions. You guys are asking too many questions. It moved. There was a cool one, and then it moved. Oh, how long is it taking to get the payroll tax credit when you're filing? It's 941. I think that's the payroll tax. There's another form that you're using for the payroll tax credit. And my understanding is that they're having a tough time getting them out. Have you heard anybody getting payroll tax credit?
No, but the way that they were doing it so that you saw an immediate benefit from it is you're still filing your 941, but you're not having to pay the deposit. Mm-hmm. And then if the tax credit you're entitled to is in excess of that, that's when you're filing the advance form to get those funds back. But no, I haven't seen anybody actually get it.
Yep, it's weird. So you're applying it, so you're not paying it. And then if there's excess, then you're supposed to be getting it. But like I said earlier, I think I said it earlier. Maybe it was in a different I'm trying to blend. And actually, I think it was on radio earlier. The IRS had something like 10 semi-trucks full of mail outside their Fresno location or something.
I don't doubt it.
It was a large number that they hadn't opened because they just haven't been, they haven't been there. So the loans, the paperwork's not being processed. And I think that's one where you'd actually mail it in. Somebody says, my PPP loan was approved in May. I've used all the funds for payroll. How and when can I apply for loan forgiveness? And it's a form that you could be doing right now. So he says, or she says, or he or she says, B of A is not helpful as usual. So we have it. If you reach out, somebody will get you the form. It's actually a standard form that all the banks are using.
Yep.
Do you know the number of it?
No.
I like putting you on the spot.
Didn't know if there was a number associated. I know that there's an EZ form.
Yeah, there is an EZ form, and I forget the number.
Wait for them to change it again.
Yeah. If you file as a sole proprietor and operate at a loss in 2019, do you still qualify for any of the stimulus packages? Yeah, you can still do an EIDL loan because it's based off of your operating expenses and all that. So you're still able to get people even if they had a little bit of a loss.
If they had a loss as a sole proprietor?
Yeah.
No.
On an EIDL?
Oh, an EIDL.
Yeah.
Jeez. I keep getting these things confused. for Schedule C, getting an EIDL, yeah, because that's going to be based on your
expenses.
Gross income less COGS.
Yeah. It's called gross profit.
Gross profit.
And that just means your gross income minus your cost of goods sold and
divided by two was the calculation.
And then you add in your rental losses too. So like there's ways to, yes, you can still get it. And then do you still need to file for an advance? Yes. It asked me if I wanted a refund on form 941. So that must be that's weird. I think there's an actual this might be a different issue, Mina. So I would say that we want to take a look at it. There's an actual form that they're using for the credit that you're getting back when you're doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's two. You're looking for an economic injury disaster loan. If you are a full-time stock trader, do you qualify for unemployment if you go bust? So it depends. You want to answer that? I love saying it depends. I feel smart.
You know, I'm not sure on that one.
If you're a S Corp and you're an employee, then you could get unemployment.
Okay.
If you are just a stock trader and you're trying to be a trader in securities, the answer is there's no way. So you could try, but you don't qualify. So it's not going to, you know, so that's always the fun part. So my understanding is that when you're a trader in securities, you're taking your losses on your Schedule C and your income on your Schedule D, unless you,
right.
You know, and that's usually what gets you audited because it doesn't make any sense. And that's just what they've been doing for all these years. And everybody gets audited and they find creative ways to tell you no. Every now and again, a trader who's like really doing it full time every day, hardcore, thousands of trades, they don't take breaks. Those guys will oftentimes prevail. And what they're trying to do is take their losses, which should just tell you right there, don't be a trader.
Right.
Yeah, if the successful ones are the ones with the biggest losses, then it's like the guy that says, we lose on every widget we sell, but we'll make it up in volume. More fun stuff. Somebody asked, can I apply for unemployment and also EIDL and PPP? Yeah, actually you can, but it's going to be a little weird. You're not going to be able to take unemployment and pay yourself a full-time wage, that's for sure. But your business can still seek those benefits. It's just there's certain limitations on what you can use it for. So the PPP, if you want it forgiven, you're probably not going to be able to get unemployment because that's what it's really there for. Really what it was they gave money to businesses saying, keep paying your staff, we'll forgive it, rather than have them go on to unemployment. That's really what it was looking at.
So I don't know if it was all states or some states that were allowing for like a partial unemployment payment to make up for your employer not being able to bring you back full time, that kind of thing.
Oh, here's the same question. I didn't realize. I have, this is almost the same as somebody asked this on the chat, maybe the same person. I have several rental properties, but no legal entity and reported a loss in my 2019 tax. Oh, it's a different question. Okay, they were talking about a sole proprietor. So this is the rental. Do I qualify to apply for an EIDL? Yes. And here's when you apply for the EIDL, by the way, you're going to get a free $1,000 thanks for signing up no matter what. Do they still have the bonus?
No.
They just ran out of that money. So
correct.
So until they put more money into it, you were going to get a free $1,000. If you have employees, you get $1,000 per employee. And somebody says, can somebody go on unemployment after 8 weeks? Yes. If you do the PPP and you get yourself paid back, absolutely. All right, I'm going to have to pump ahead because You just talk too dang much.
I know. I've been told that so many times.
Amazing, chatty Kathy. Oh, you and Jeff. All right. How do 10? Poor Jeff. You guys have no idea how hard it is to deal with my, sorry, Katush sitting here. Poor Jeff. He's patient. And Tony's been patient.
Oh, how very do, much so.
It was not nice. All right. How do 1031, you're supposed to say, no, you're a really nice guy.
Oh, and no, you're a really nice guy.
See? Now I feel
that. Easy.
All right. How do 1031 exchanges work if properties are held in an LLC? So here's how it works. When you do a 1031 exchange, and for those of you who don't know what a 1031 exchange is, you're swapping real estate for real estate. There's no other type of 1031 exchange anymore. So you're selling one set of real estate or one piece of real estate or an LLC holding real estate, the real estate in an LLC, and you're buying more real estate, either 1, 2, 10, 20, 50 pieces of property. It doesn't matter as long as the value is more or the same. Then you're rolling the basis you have in the first property or properties into that new property. So first off, you're not paying tax. It's a fancy way of saying if I paid $1,000 for a house and it went up to $1 million and I sold it for $1 million, as long as I buy $1 million of property, then I don't have to pay any tax, even though I made $1 million. It just rolls it forward. Somebody says, our new idle applications. Oh, sorry, Joyce, I'll get to that in a second. I thought that somebody was giving me some new information. Anyway, so if you go, but the rules are, under a 1031 exchange, you have to go name to name. So I didn't mean to hobart that. Did you have anything you wanted to throw on that? Or
that was the only piece of it I wanted to make sure of, is that we do have to have the same ownership. So if we're doing it in an LLC, we want to do the 1031 exchange in that same LLC.
You have to go name to name. Mm-hmm. You have to go name to name. So if you're selling out of an LLC, so if you sell a property, you're buying the property in the same LLC. And if you say, but I want to buy out some of the partners, okay, you do what's called a swap and drop. You enter into an agreement to buy out their interest. You sell the property, buy the new one, refi that property, buy them out of their interest. You don't do it where you're just giving them cash and you're buying one third of the property. You have to close in a property that's of equal or greater value.
If we have the property that we're giving up in a single member LLC and we want to put the acquired property in a new single member LLC, we can do that.
You could drop and swap in that case. You might drop the property out of the LLC and then sell it and then set up a new LLC and transfer it into it. There's technically, there's people that still get the heebie-jeebies off of that one. Mm-hmm. But I think that you're okay. Like the time frame, we haven't heard anything go. But yeah, you always use a good 1031 exchange facilitator.
They're qualified intermediaries.
Yep. So you always use somebody who knows their stuff. All right, somebody's asking, on the 199A deduction, is it available for income from rental real estate? The answer is yes. So, and it depends. So if it's residential rental, yes. If it's triple net lease, that's different. And commercial is a little bit different. They all have time, like you have to spend 250 hours. I think Sam already got you on some of that, but or Pio Sam. So let's see. If you do, this is one of my favorites. If you do a 1031 exchange from California property to Nevada property, what taxes do I pay?
Oh, you're so funny. You pay taxes on any boot that you might have, but a 1031 exchange can be done from one state to another state. The geographic location of where that property you're giving up and the property acquired doesn't really matter. Is there something else to that?
Yeah, so it gets fun. So if I have a California property and I sell it and buy Nevada properties, then I don't have to pay any tax. But California isn't going to let you go quietly.
Okay.
California wants that tax whenever you do sell that property. So they're going to make you fill out this beautiful form, which I just grabbed it. You have to fill this out every year. So you do a 1031 exchange and you just have to let them know I haven't sold the replacement property.
So
if you sell the replacement property, so let's say I bought a piece of residential real estate that I rented out in Palm Springs and I bought it for $100,000 and it becomes worth $300,000. And I sell it and I roll that $300,000 into two pieces of property in Nevada for $300,000. I would pay zero tax. Mm-hmm. But California knows that I made a couple hundred thousand bucks plus recapture that is going to be owed to California if I ever sell those. Yep. So I have to let them know.
So they're going to poke their nose in every year.
Yep.
Make sure you haven't done anything.
Yep. Somebody says, can you sell a rental home and buy land as a 1031 exchange? Yes. Does a 1031 exchange need to be residential to residential, or can it be residential to commercial? It could be any real estate to any real estate. So residential to commercial is absolutely fine. You could do a mobile home park and buy 6 single families. You could buy, you could sell a warehouse and buy 20 condos. And it's basically, it's any real estate. Let's see. Foreign national living abroad owns investment apartment in New York City. Can they 1031 exchange? I don't think there's a restriction on foreigners doing 1031 exchange.
Not that I have read.
Yep. So I think you're fine as long as it's U.S. property that they're exchanging into. I believe that's the answer. Is there a way to make an agreement to purchase before you sell the 1031 exchange property? I'm not sure I quite understand that.
Are you talking about a reverse 1031 exchange?
Yeah, maybe that's. They're either doing a reverse, which the answer is yes. And I see what you're saying. It's called So you're probably talking about a reverse exchange, and you can actually do construction where you buy land and build a house on it, as long as you did it done within 180 days. So there's a few different ways. The Starker exchange is when you sell and then buy within 180 days. You have to identify replacement property or properties within 45 days. Mm-hmm. A reverse exchange is when you buy the property that you're going to go into before you sell your relinquished property. So I'm going to sell a property. I know I'm going to get 500 grand. Let's say it's the same thing. I have a property in Palm Springs. It's worth 300 grand. I bought it for 100. I go to Nevada and I put 2 purchase agreements on properties. Here's what you'd want to make sure of. So he just answered. He says, no, I just want to lock the property. Make sure you're using the facilitator or the qualified exchange intermediary to put the purchase agreements on those. You want to make sure that you are not touching those new properties, that it's the intermediary doing it for you. Mm-hmm. So, but the answer is yes, you can. And it's just domestic. Somebody says, is it international? No, it's United States or the U.S. Virgin Islands. I know you can do that too. Under CARES, I borrow $100,000 from my 401k. Does the remaining balance remain invested as before and do the repayments I make? What say you, Tony?
They're asking if if I had $200,000 in my 401k, I took out $100. The remaining $100 is still going to be invested as before. The repayments you make, it depends. You're going to have to get back into some of the positions that you might have been holding before, if that's the case.
Correctamundo. And then when you make the repayments, it's going to be, if you borrow money from your plan now, it's a 6-year payback. It's a year of deferral. The interest accrues, but you don't start making payment till year 2, and it's over a 5-year period, you pay it back, and you pay it on a quarterly basis. Whenever you make your payments back, yeah, you can invest that however you want. Mm-hmm. We encourage that. All right. You guys made it through another. So if you guys like listening to this type of information, and we do, because we're nerdy, then listen to our podcasts. You can go listen. We break these down, and you can always listen to some of the replays. Oh, there's one more question that I got to answer. Can I transfer out of my 401k with my current job and put it into a 401k with my C-Corp and then purchase a short-term rental property through the C-Corp? No, you wouldn't buy the short-term rental through the C-Corp. You'd buy it through the 401k, and yes, you can. Anyway, so there's a whole bunch of fun stuff. You guys are good. You guys always ask. Somebody says something about this. Somebody says, I love listening to this. You're awesome. And the Saturday seminar was awesome too. Yeah, we did Infinity Investing. And we're going to do one this next coming month in August that is for our Generation Zs. You know what a Generation Z is?
People who are younger than me.
Yeah, 25 and below. So we're going to do one just for the Generation Zers. Anybody can come on, but we're going to make it special. I think that's the 22nd or something like that. We'll give you guys free access, obviously, because we always do that for our Tax Tuesday people. Speaking of free access, you get free access to iTunes. You get free access to Google Play. And then we always do a little giveaway for you. And that giveaway is please come to our event on Saturday if you want to learn about real estate. Aaron Adams rocks it. We always have fun. And I'm going to teach you the tax and asset protection basics for real estate. We have one day to do it. We will do this from 9 to 5 Pacific Standard Time. And Aaron is one of those guys. He's worth millions and millions of dollars. He owns, he manages over 3,000 properties, has properties in Indianapolis, Charlotte, North Carolina, in Kansas City, Kansas. He always says Kansas City, Mo, or Kansas City, Kansas. So, and Idaho and Texas. And so he comes and he just brings a lot of fun stuff. Oh, somebody says, what's the link for the podcast again? If I don't know, let's see. Did I throw it up there? Oh, maybe I didn't. There we go. AndersonAdvisors.com/podcast. There you go, Joyce. And you can get access to the previous sessions. I'm sure that we can get you the access. I know that it's definitely for our platinum people. You get it. And but we always do that. I employ my Gen Z. Yes, 13-0 for my business. Doing what and for how much? Louise, you can get them for anything at a fair market value. And some, yeah, I think that somebody just got it. Pyle just got you. Just as I'm speaking, he's giving you the link. And somebody, what is the, yes, I am an attorney, but I invest. And by the way, the reason we created Infinity was because I look at your guys' tax returns all the time. Tony looks at tax returns. Mm-hmm. We know who makes money and we know who doesn't. And a lot of the people like to say they made money, but they're really not making any money. I look at cash flow. Cash flow is king, guys. And it, the people that make the money and keep the money are the ones who are doing the boring stuff. Notice who's not day trading right now. Grandpa Buffett. He's sitting on his cash and buying big, huge utility companies and energy companies.
Grandpa Buffett.
Yeah. He's the one who says, he actually wrote this to his shareholders of Berkshire Hathaway, which you too can own a share for $280,000. And he says, be greedy when others are fearful and fearful when others are greedy. So does a really good job. Anyway, here's that link to the investment if you want to learn about real estate. And by the way, this is going to be cash flow stuff. Like this isn't going to be, you're going to make $1 million flipping. We will show you how to do the flipping, but you're doing it with the idea that you're going to buy and hold, and you're going to your holding period is forever. I don't believe in selling stuff. You buy it and you hold on to it, and then you think you're really smart later. Like I always forget what I paid for stuff, and then I just tell it that people that I bought it for cheaper than I did, and I'm like, oh, I think I picked that up for like $10,000, but it's a building. Oh, maybe it's a lot more. Makes you feel. All right, there's our links to all of our social media. And then by all means, please send us in questions. We get hundreds per week. We don't charge for this, but we get a really good idea of what y'all are looking for, and we're able to answer effectively. How do you like this, Tony? I know you've been on these before, but did you have fun today?
Yeah, I think it's great.
I just want to say thank you, Tony, for stepping in, because Jeff, his head exploded after the tax deadline. No, I think he's on vacation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's on vacation. What you don't realize is that Jeff is actually 23 and
full head of hair.
And his hair all fell out. And I'm sorry. That's horrible. No, we miss Jeff, but he has a much needed vacation. So he'll be back in a few weeks. Maybe. We'll see.
Oh, look, that's a vote for me. It says you have a wonderful team.
See? And I didn't even tell you guys. We had Pio Sam on and Tavia and Susan and Patty were answering all your questions. I didn't even tell you that we have this whole team there trying to make sure that you guys are getting your questions answered. Where else can you get this sort of thing? I don't know. I don't think it exists. So at least not at the price of a whopping 0 cents. Mm-hmm. So we just like doing it, and it keeps us on our toes, and we learn from you guys too. So somebody has to keep you in line. That's exactly right. Somebody has to. You guys rock it. Until next time, this is Toby and Tony.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Show notes for links to everything mentioned in this episode can be found on our website at AndersonAdvisors.com/podcast. Be sure you subscribe to our podcast, and if you are already a subscriber, please provide us a review of what you thought of this episode.